is equally valuable.
PBS presents this program in color.
It's time for the Radio Dan Show with your host, Radio Dan.
Hello, everybody out there in Internet Radio Land. It is time for the Radio Dan Show, and I am your host, Radio Dan.
Radio Dan.
Yes, that's me. And as always, sitting next to me is intern Sicky. So Jessica, please say hello to everyone.
We've found out what I have.
Do tell.
Bronchitis.
Oh, anybody out there have bronchitis? Then you are our winner.
Stop coughing into the microphone.
I coughed over here. I don't know what you're talking about.
You have to turn your head. If you do it one more time, I'm leaving the studio.
Oh, please.
And that means I'm leaving you forever.
Oh, okay. So you'll go and infect someone else with your illness.
Yes.
Now, you know, okay, before we get on with the get down here, and it is Canon Films Night, and I'll get into that in a few minutes. Now, Skype today started to not let me call out to people. It was today. So I just signed up for the Skype out. However, I didn't do it in time in order to sign up to get onto Blog Talk, which happens to be a pain in the ass, by the way, getting onto Blog Talk.
Oh, is that right?
Yes. Blog Talk is a pain in the rectum. However...
In the rectum.
However, let's see if we can do it now. We'll do it on the air.
Oh, how funny. You haven't done it yet, huh?
No. So the Blog Talk people, they're missing out. Right now, they're all wondering where I am.
They're probably not, though.
No, actually...
To Blog Talk Radio, please enter your host PIN. When finished, press the pound key.
This is very exciting.
I know, I'm very excited.
See, that's not good when it doesn't just go right into that.
Vroom. Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. Please enter your host PIN. When finished, press the pound key.
I say screw Blog Talk.
Is that what you say? I'll tell you what. Here's what I'll do.
Stop it. I'm going to smack you in the face.
You know, you're awfully feisty for someone who was, like, whining and crying a few minutes ago.
I have my earphones on. And you know what? The audience can hear you. Why don't
you...
You know what? I'm doing it too evilly, aren't I?
Yes.
Okay. Danny?
Yes.
Radio Danny?
Yes. Radio Danny. Let's ease up on that.
Every time you cough, I know you cough into your little fist, like that.
Mm-hmm.
I know that takes all the shock away,
mm-hmm.
and that's very wise.
Right. Thank you.
But you need to turn your head in the opposite direction.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that bit of advice. Radio Danny. That's what they called me when I was 10. That's when I was Radio Danny.
Oh, is that right?
That's right. Right now I'm Radio Dan, goddammit. Just get used to that.
Do I have permission after so many times that you do it to, like, punch you and say... Turn your head!
I'm not going to give you permission ever to punch me, because then you'll just be looking for that moment where you can just swing out.
I'll let it happen. All right, listen, I've got a little story.
Oh, okay. Is this going to be our segment for the night?
Yeah, it's about Dan's driving.
Oh!
Can I do it?
My driving. Yeah, go ahead.
All right, so Dan's like an old man driver. I don't know how he gets so many, like, tickets.
Oh, all right. Do you want to know why I drive like an old man?
Because you have so many tickets.
Because I've gotten so many tickets.
But no,
I have a thing on my license that says business only.
I know.
Okay?
It's so funny. But anyway, listen. So, Dan drives real bad. Like, you know how you're at a light and you're like five cars down in the turning lane And if the first person would go as soon as the light turned green, now I'm not talking peeling out, but instead of being like the type of driver that waits there for 5 seconds because you don't realize the light had turned green, then everybody could go. But instead, only two cars get to go. Because by the time that first driver... Now, Dan does this stuff all the time. When I'm actually a poor driver because I drive too fast. I'm too much of an offensive driver.
Uh-huh.
So, like, when the light turns green, I'm like one of those drag racers. I'm, like, peeling out, you know? So I'm quite the opposite of Dan in that situation. But when it got to the point where I was nagging you about it.
Yes.
And you were like, I don't do that. And I said to him, well, okay, what I'm going to do, or you said something like, I've only done it a couple times.
It's true. The amount of times that you think I do it compared to the actual times that I've actually done it is a great difference.
You're Dan.
What? I'm there.
No, you're wrong. And I proved that.
I'm there.
You be quiet because you know what? You're like, forget a lot right now. Just hush you.
Oh, yes, dear.
So it got to the point where I said, you know what? From now on.
One day off the air.
Hush. It got to the point where I said, all right, from now on, I'm just going to say, you're doing it. I'm not going to nag you about it. I don't care. The fact that you're holding up traffic from, like, a few cars behind us. Anyway. So.
Yes, please continue.
I know. I get so sidetracked.
It's your own fault.
So it got to the point where every time you were first at a light,
mm-hmm.
you would do it. Your mind wanders. It's like when you're watching an hour-long sitcom, a television show.
Just right, for example, like right now, the minds of all the people listening to your little story.
No, they're all saying, I can't believe Dan drives like that, and I can't believe Jessica puts
boring.
Up with it. So, this is the same situation.
Mm-hmm.
Every time you cough into the microphone,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to, like, tap you. That way, the audience doesn't know that I'm giving you a hard time
mm-hmm.
and embarrassing you. And I'm annoying you in the same sense.
See, I know it's because you just hit me twice unnecessarily.
Well, just so you know what you're in for. You're in for this.
Oh, is that what I'm in for?
And eventually it's going to be like a pinch or an underarm tickle, which we all know you're ticklish.
All right. Will you calm down with that? Man, you know,
and
one day off the mic.
I can't believe you. You sit here and say to this day, yeah, you know what? Didn't we find out how much you over-exaggerate? And I'm like, whatever, you're so wrong. You got to the point where you're like, shut up. And I'm tired of hearing you tell me I'm doing it again. Because you did it, like, every time you were first at a light.
Whatever.
This is horrible.
It's a complete and utter lie.
It's the one thing I've ever remembered.
See, Tyler Hollywood wants to know where you got your backseat driver's license.
And
let me tell you something. If there's ever someone who was the backseat driver, it is the intern, Jessica. What, you're not?
No, you're not? You make me one.
No. It's gotten away from you.
No.
You've lost it.
I'm insane.
You've lost the audience.
You're such a bad driver. Listen to me. He's driving in the mm-hmm. in the lane, right? It's
yes.
45 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm.
We're behind, I guess, an old person who's doing like 30. And there's nobody next to him. Every now and then a car flies by. I'm like, Dan, I'm late for work. Why are you in this lane? He's like, oh, yeah. Do you not do that?
That may have happened once or twice. It's
ooh.
Early in the morning.
Ooh.
I haven't had a cup of coffee.
Yeah. Once or twice?
Once or twice.
Oh, I hate you. You're a liar.
Wait, I need to call the blog talk again.
Oh.
Let's see.
Listen.
Let's see if this crap works again.
I've never been a backseat driver.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. Please enter your host PIN. When finished, press the pound key. Please wait while we connect your call.
I believe
please
we're
wait.
On. How exciting.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, blog talkers. This is all the intro that you people get because your service kind of stinks.
You're going to get us kicked off Blog Talk.
Oh, big, you know, that's fine. I've been kicked out of better places. But I haven't been kicked out of anywhere. Wait, is that true? Have I ever been kicked out of someplace? I don't know. There must be some place I've been kicked out of. I don't know.
The girls' room.
Well, that's because everyone loves me. I can't help it. I can't help it that I'm so damn lovable, Jessica. You may want to work on that one of these days. Anyway. So, How are you feeling tonight? Are you feeling any better?
I wish the audience could be around you when you drive. They'd be like, you know, all right, I'll give you this. Am I a jealous person?
No, not really.
Do I get jealous when girls talk to you or you're flirting or anything like that?
Do I flirt in front of you?
Look at that face. Well, you've danced with girls at clubs and stuff.
Like once or twice. Well, come on, you can count it on one hand. Yes! You have. You weren't thrilled about it.
Oh, my God.
I can't help that I'm hot. And that the
ladies
like me.
Anyway, I'm not typically a backseat driver, but with Dan, I have to be because he's so bad. I think at one point I said, Dan, listen, when you need to change lanes, this is what you do. You look over your head to see if someone's coming. If you see a little spot coming up, you put your blinker on and you slide in. Remember that?
Yes, I almost...
You're all busy.
I know. Thanks for the tip on how to change lanes. You know, for someone with such a little voice, you're doing a lot of yip-yapping. You might want to ease it up.
That's because I'm on codeine.
Oh, is that what it is? Does codeine hype you up? Because I thought it was going to bring you down.
It makes me feel kind of funny.
Oh, okay.
Like my eyes are a little rolly in my head.
They're a little rolly in your head. I'm not sure what that means, but okay. That's fantastic. All right, now, do you want to bring on our guest right now, or do you have anything else you want to go over before
we
go?
Well, I think we should introduce some stuff, give a little...
Well, that's what I'm going to do. What I mean, do you want to get into that now? Or I'm giving you the option, which is very rare of me. Since
so your driving was my segment?
Yes.
Oh, cool, cool. Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Oh, but you asked how I was. Should I tell the blog talkers how I have bronchitis?
Yes. Tell people how you have bronchitis and how you're breathing it on me right now.
That's okay. I caught it from you.
Probably.
And you know what? Since Dan doesn't have health insurance.
No, I sure don't.
I have to split my pills with him.
Isn't that awesome? Free drugs.
All right.
That's what I say. That's what I'm all about is the free drugs. Anyway, we're going to be talking to a guy named Patrick Runkle. He runs a website called canonfilms.com.
Woohoo!
Right?
A real expert.
Was that good?
That was good when you caught yourself and then turned your head.
Hey, the important thing is that the percentage of coughs that I made as opposed to the ones that went into the microphone.
Very true.
Right?
You know what? You might want to at least try to remember that when we have our guest on the line, don't you think?
Oh, okay. Okay.
You detected that bit of sarcasm.
Just a little bit. Hey, Jess, why don't you get us a guest one time?
I did. His name is Jay Cronley, bitch.
You got Jay Cronley because I was, like, pushing you to get him. And who are you calling bitch on the air? I can't believe that.
I'm sorry. It's so funny.
No more codeine. Anyway, the Canon Films website, canonfilms.com, is sort of like a museum and a tribute to the wonder and glory that was the movie studio of Canon Films. And this was a place that would, in the late 70s to early 90s, it was run by these two Israeli guys. I think that I'm saying the names right. Menahem Golan and Yoram Globus. So you would just say back in the day, Golan Globus. That was like the two guys. Kind of like the Weinstein brothers today, right?
Mm-hmm.
They ran Canon Films, and they gave us so many Chuck Norris and Charles Bronson movies, it made your head swim.
Wow.
Yes, yes. And I'm telling you, the stories behind this studio are fantastic, and they're all true.
I believe you.
Right? All right, well. I like it. Are you with me?
Yeah.
Okay.
Do I look a little zoomy?
You look a little zoomy. And
I am
and
a
like
zoomy.
When I talk to you, you have to respond.
Oh.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
All right, let's see if we can bring our pal Patrick on the line here. Try not to cough when he answers the phone. Go right ahead. Jessica's in.
Hello?
Hello, Patrick.
Hi, Dan. How are you doing?
All right. Welcome to the big show, everybody. It's Patrick Rocha from Canon Films. Patrick, you're on here with Dan, and you're also – I have my sidekick, Jessica, here. Actually, though, she had to leave in a – she's having a coughing fit, so –
That's unfortunate.
So she had to get up and run away as opposed to just coughing excessively into the phone. Okay. So let's see if she's going to be back any time soon now.
Okay.
I can hear her just hacking it up in the background.
I heard that. Yeah, she's got to work that out, I think.
Yes, it's not a good thing.
Yeah.
Hey, Jess, you coming back? She's walking by. She's shaking her head. Hey, you want a cough drop?
Yes, please.
Okay. Anyway, maybe a cough drop will help the situation. Is that good?
Hello, Patrick.
All right.
Hey, Jessica. How are you doing?
I've been better. I have bronchitis.
Yeah, that's really bad. You need an inhaler or something, maybe.
I know, right?
Yeah,
Dan says I need a plastic bubble to live in.
Yeah. Yeah, it's always a good fallback. You can just get in one of those.
Right. It would be nice, at least for my own protection, if you had the plastic bubble. Anyway, so I started to tell people a little bit about the wonder and glory of that was Golan Globus, and
yeah,
you could maybe tell us. So, how did Canon Films get started?
Well, Canon Films was originally this. It was sort of a really low rent production house in New York that was owned by a couple of guys and. It had only one movie, really, that people remember to its name, which is this movie called Joe with Peter Boyle.
Oh, yeah.
And that was in the early 70s. And it was going bankrupt around the late 70s. And these two cousins from Israel, Menachem Golan and Yoram Globus, who had made a couple movies, they actually made a bunch of movies in Israel and had a couple movies that had been exported and were popular. They bought it, and it was really, very cheap, and they bought all the shares in it, and then they started, they started putting out movies as Canon Films.
Okay, so when they first started, what were the kinds of films that they were putting out to begin with?
Well, the first big movie that they put out was Death Wish 2, and that was even before they were called Canon.
Huh.
They had moved to L.A., and somehow they raised a ton of money, or they had some money, and they decided to make this movie. And Bronson didn't want to do it, and they had to convince him. And apparently, it involved something of going to Bronson's house unannounced and dropping the script off. And they kept, the Death Wish 2 was really the first movie that they put out, but other movies that they put out in 1980, 81, 82, they put out The Last American Virgin, which is sort of a classic in its own way. Enter the Ninja was a movie that Menachem directed, which is this, its sequel is much more known than it is, but Enter the Ninja is the one with Franco Nero, and it was filmed in the Philippines. It's pretty bad, but we had some ninja movies, we had some bad action movies, and The Last American Virgin, which was a remake of a movie that they made in Israel called Lemon Popsicle.
Oh, no kidding.
Oh, I was reading about that, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Now, tell me about a movie that I see on the list. It's called The Apple.
Well, The Apple was also one of those first movies. And you see, this is Menachem himself, kind of was way into... He was sort of an old-style kind of showman, and he was really... an ambitious guy, and around that time he was making, he made Enter the Ninja himself, and he also, before that, he had made The Apple, which was, it was filmed in West Germany, and it was kind of, now it's a classic, but for a while it was just kind of unknown, and it's kind of an attempt to make a Rocky horror sort of movie, but it's wildly not good. I mean, you just have to kind of see it to believe it. It's just kind of, it takes place in the 90s, which the poster says is the new wave decade, is going to be the 90s, and it's all about this this evil music corporation called BIM, where these people wear these crazy hats and these triangle tattoos. And they make this sort of bad, overproduced kind of disco music, and it's the tale of these two people, this lovable couple from the heartland, who the girl sells her soul to BIM and starts making this crappy disco music, but the guy kind of, they break up, and he has to try to convince her to come back and not be in the, over to the dark side of BIM. And yeah, I mean, it's really bad, but the story about The Apple is that they, when it premiered in L.A., it premiered at the Egyptian Theater, and Menachem had this thing where they were handing out 12-inch records, which are the soundtrack to the movie. And apparently, by the end of it, people were throwing the records at the screen.
Oh my gosh!
And it damaged the screen, and Cannon had to pay to fix the screen at the Egyptian Theater in LA.
That's so funny. I don't know what's funnier, though, that movie or the fact that you said it's like Rocky Horror Picture Show, but bad.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of, have you seen it? Have either of you seen The Apple?
No,
but I've seen Rocky Horror Picture Show, and that ain't good.
I really want to see The Apple now, though, don't you?
I know, so do I. Like,
sounds great.
What is that,
Mr. Yeah, MGM put it out on DVD a couple of years ago. Actually, there was a guy who also visited the site, who was a big fan, and he ran midnight shows at the New Art in West Hollywood. And a few years ago, he had MGM when they were with it. He knew somebody at MGM. They were making the DVD, and he had them strike a print of it, which he showed. And the place was sold out. I went there at midnight. This is when I lived in California before, and it was sold out. So there are Apple fans out there, and this guy, he plays, if any of your listeners are in L.A. and they're playing Canon movies at the New Art for midnight movies, I don't know if he's still doing it, but he had a whole reel of Canon movie trailers also, which people were just dying. It was unbelievable.
That is so funny.
Wow, so it wasn't just the Apple, it was like Canon movie night.
Well, kind of, yeah. He also showed, I think he showed The Last American Virgin also at one point. But yeah, The Apple was the big one, and there was a line down the street. It was a pick in the LA Weekly's like film poll thing or something. A bunch of sort of hipsters showed up, but there were also people there dressed in Apple outfits.
Oh, get out of here!
It's proof that in LA you can find absolutely anything.
Yeah,
so I was.
Good Lord, that's a riot. All right, so looking at the Canon filmography here, I know you said Death Wish 2, but I see that a whole lot, like pretty much everything Charles Bronson did in the 1980s was with Canon.
That's exactly true, yeah, because Death Wish 2 was a huge hit, and it was sort of an unexpected hit, I guess, because Bronson had made a bunch of, I'm a huge Bronson fan, you know, I have to, full disclosure, I have to say that I actually love Charles Bronson, so... You know, I can't actually judge it fairly, but he had made some really, really bad movies in the late 70s, and I guess Death Wish 2 was sort of a return to form, and it had, the amazing part about Death Wish 2 is that Canon got the people who made the original Death Wish, which is not just Bronson, but also British director Michael Winner, and, Vincent Gardenia, and a couple other people to kind of, take a crap on their own movie, because Death Wish was really respected, you know?
Yes.
And Death Wish 2 is just, it's a complete, it's one of the funniest movies ever made, I think. I mean, it's just like, you can't believe what's going on when you're watching it. You know, Larry Fishburne plays one of the thugs in it, and it sort of takes a serious topic, which was the original Death Wish movie, urban violence or whatever, and it just kind of blows it up to this ridiculous sort of level of just comic book violence, and so Death Wish 2. But then Bronson decided to that was such a big hit that he did a bunch of other movies with them. 10 to Midnight is another really great one. Then he did Death Wish 3 and 4 and eventually 5, and there are a couple other really great Bronson movies. There's Assassination, where he plays like a presidential Secret Service agent.
Yes, I remember that one.
There's Messenger of Death. And then one of the last movies that Menachem Golan and Yoram Globus made together as Canon was Kinjite, which is sort of a camp classic also, which is this movie, very bizarre movie with Bronson trying to track down a ring of like sort of child prostitution pimps in L.A., and there's some of this Japanese element to it. Very bizarre movie. But I think Roger Ebert called it one of the most distasteful things he'd ever seen. So there you go.
No kidding. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Now, also, as I'm looking over the filmography here, not only is there a bunch of Charles Bronson films, starting in 84, I start seeing a lot of Chuck Norris movies. Now, how does this come about?
Yeah, well, the thing is that Golan and Globus, they had, they Gohan loves like anything he thought he could make this big announcement about. He's like, you know, any big action movie he could make an announcement about at Cannes Film Festival and sell it across the world. And so a lot of these movies and a lot of these decisions that they made were to make movies that they thought would sell internationally. So, you know, an action movie, you don't need a lot of dialogue. You know, people, international audiences, especially in the 80s, were just eating all this stuff up. And so Norris had made, a couple, pretty successful early 80s martial arts movies. There's, I guess, Forced Vengeance, The Octagon, Good Guys Wear Black was in the 70s, and then Wolf and Quaid was another movie they made.
Oh, yeah.
And I think, yeah, and then Gohan and Globus signed him to make two missing in action movies simultaneously. Do you know this story? This was one of the ones I really wanted to tell.
Okay.
So Missing in Action was the first movie that they made, and then Missing in Action 2, which is actually a prequel. But one of the great sort of canon, not swindles, but they're one of the great hustles, was that they shot the movies simultaneously. And if you've seen Missing in Action, the first movie, one that we all know as Missing in Action, is a movie that's sort of, it's about Norris going back to Vietnam to rescue POWs, right?
Yes.
In the 80s. And then the second movie that we know as Missing in Action 2, is called The Beginning, and it's about Norris's stay in the POW camp during the Vietnam War. And the amazing part about it is that they filmed them the opposite way. So they filmed them to go in chronological order, but when they were done, they realized that that the one we know as Missing in Action 2 was going to be so bad. What they did was flip them and have the sequel be the first movie, and then the second one be the second, the prequel, make a prequel out of it.
I love that.
So that's one of the great canon stories.
Man, that is fantastic. And then we end up with Missing in Action 3. Was that necessary?
Yeah, Missing in Action 3 is not very good. I mean, the first two have their own sort of crazy logic. Like, the first one is not bad in terms of an action movie. And then Missing in Action 2, The Beginning, is just kind of high comedy as far as I'm concerned. I mean, it's just really, really kind of crazy and bad. And it looks really bad. That's the difference. They had these... The first one was directed by... The one we know is the first one, the good one, was directed by Joseph Zito, who would go on to make Invasion USA, which was their next, Norris movie. And so it looks pretty good, but the Missing in Action 2, The Beginning, is just terrible. And then the third one, which was a few years later, was directed by Chuck Norris's brother, which was not, not really a good idea either, I don't
know. No, not really.
Yeah. And, so anyway, so after Missing in Action was a big hit, they spent a ton of money making this movie called Invasion USA, which I don't know if you're familiar with it. But
oh, yeah.
I think part of it takes place in South Florida, which I think is where you are, right?
Yes, I am. I'm in Fort Lauderdale.
Yeah, so Invasion USA is set in Florida, and it's about the tagline, which is one of my all-time favorites, is America wasn't ready, but he was. So Chuck Norris defends America against these sort of communist invaders. One of the all-time great movies. They don't have, unlike people who would actually want to destroy America, they didn't actually try to attack anything really important. They seem to just kind of show up and try to blow up shopping malls and Christmas trees and things. Things that would really just piss people off instead of actually doing any damage, I think. So.
Sometimes pissing people off works wonders.
That's probably true. It's true. But Invasion USA is one of the all-time greats. One time I interviewed the composer, the guy who wrote the music for Invasion USA, who survived and went on to write music for other movies. But he said he told these great stories, and there are all these great stories of the canon films as they sort of got caught up in the decade, in the 80s and the decade of greed, I guess. As their movies came, whenever they had a huge hit, they would wildly overspend and buy huge buildings in L.A. and drive around town in limousines. They sent limousines to pick up the composer to take him to the scoring sessions for Invasion USA. I think these are some of the reasons that they eventually went bankrupt. But
would make some sense.
They just wanted to show off, and and you know, they were effective at it, sort of, for a while, I guess. But.
So, did a lot of these movies turn a good profit for them?
Well, I think what it was that Golan was a really good salesman, and the international market was really important for them, and they would sell a lot of these action movies into the international market even before the movie was made. So they'd say, oh, we have another Bronson movie coming up, and you know, they would sell the rights to these theaters internationally, and they'd know that they could make a certain amount, if they could make the movie for a certain amount of money, they would be guaranteed to turn a profit. And interestingly, it was Golan's desire to kind of be seen as a legitimate filmmaker or as a legitimate movie studio that eventually was what kind of caught them. Because if they had just kept doing that, if they had just kept making crappy action movies, they probably would still be around. But, you know, in the mid-80s, they you know, he got sort of a head full of ideas that he would be the next major studio. And they started making... they made some movies that are really well-respected. They made Runaway Train with John Voight.
Oh, yeah, I remember. I saw seeing that in the theater when I was a kid.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's disturbing.
Yeah.
It was a good movie.
And a couple other movies that they made Barfly, which is very well-respected.
Mm-hmm. Mickey Rourke's one.
And then they started overspending on, like, you know, Superman 4 and stuff like that, which I think we'll probably talk about eventually. But, yeah, they had some huge ideas, and they spent so much money on movies like Life Force and Over the Top that were huge failures.
Well, yeah, like, I'm looking at the two Stallone movies on the list here, Cobra and Over the Top. How did they get involved with Stallone? I mean, that seems like a little bit higher echelon than your Chuck Norris.
Yeah, Stallone was the big. The story that I heard was that they didn't actually produce Cobra, but that they signed some contract whereby they gave Stallone like an enormous amount of money, and they kind of got their names attached to Cobra, and they Menachem Golan himself directed Over the Top, so that was the movie that they really were using Stallone for, and that was in a period where Stallone, I think, was a little bit. You know, it was he had just finished Rambo 2 and Rocky 4, I guess, and he was a huge star, and that kind of gives you an indication of how much money Cannon was throwing around in the mid 80s that they were able to sign him to make this movie. And I don't, you know, Over the Top is now sort of a punchline to a joke.
Oh, absolutely.
The arm wrestling movie, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've seen it, but it's pretty amazing. And yeah, Stallone, I just read an interview with Stallone, because, you know, Rocky VI just came out. He was talking about arm wrestling, how much research he did for the arm wrestling thing. And I just, you know, he probably shouldn't be talking about that.
Right?
No, we really shouldn't.
Well, you know, I don't think a lot of people look at Stallone for the brains aspect. You know, I remember hearing interviews and stuff with the whole Cobra thing. And that was, like, such a bad idea from the beginning. I mean, isn't it a movie that he, like, wrote and everything? Or was it... Oh, no, you know what I was thinking about?
What are you thinking of?
How he was supposed to do Beverly Hills Cop.
Oh, okay.
And instead went to do Cobra or something like that.
Yeah.
No, I think he did Rhinestone instead of Beverly Hills Cop.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I think he did Rhinestone, and then he was upset, and then he made Cobra as sort of an attempt to do something like Beverly Hills Cop. But if you've ever seen Cobra, you know, it doesn't quite get there. I don't know. I wouldn't really compare it with Beverly Hills Cop.
No, I'm totally with you on that. Now, Over the Top, okay, that's 1987, and I want to know, how did Cannon get involved with making Superman 4?
Yeah, that's another famous story. It was apparently a gentleman's agreement between... And this is one of my, I don't know if this will bore your listeners, but it was a great sort of interface between two of the great hilarious producers of movies who I think ever lived. There was the Salkind, Alexander and Ilya Salkind, who were these crazy, I think they made their money in Russian oil or something, and then they became movie producers. They were the ones that produced the Superman movies. And then Golan, who was kind of very similar to them, and apparently they came up with Golan. The Salkinds were pissed off after they made Superman 3, which is a bad movie.
Yeah.
And Golan said, well, we'll make the next Superman movie. And, you know, they came to some sort of gentleman's agreement about it over dinner, apparently. And, and Golan just paid the Saul Kinds a ton of money for the rights to it. And then they turned it over to Christopher Reeve to come up with the idea, rest in peace, come up with the idea for this movie, which wasn't the greatest idea. You know, it's a sort of anti-nuclear war movie.
Yes.
And, you know, it has, the bad guy is Nuclear Man.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes, I can't remember, what he was, but I can see him in my head. I can see him flying around.
Yeah, he has a bad cape. It's a really bad outfit. And, I mean, they paid Gene Hackman. I don't know if he's talked about it much, but he's in it. I don't know what they paid him to do that. And John Cryer is in it, you know, 80s icon. Sort of teen star, whatever he was.
Yeah, just come on, Jessica, Ducky.
Oh,
yeah, exactly.
All you got to say is Ducky, and she perks up. Oh, yeah.
So yeah, I mean, Superman 4, it has this great credit. If you remember, all the Superman movies have those titles at the beginning. The main titles have to, like, fly past the screen.
Yes.
You know, it's like whatever. And the Superman 4 ones are kind of funny because they have Golan and Glow's name in them, which is kind of fun to cheer for. And there's this weird credit that says Superman movie series initiated by Alexander Salkind, as if we didn't know that from the previous one. And because Alexander Salkind is all over the old ones. And so that's Superman 4. I mean, people, I get emails about it all the time because apparently there's a longer cut of it with that it was different before. And they cut a bunch out of it, and I think that there's some deleted scenes on a new DVD, which I haven't checked out yet.
Oh, yeah, there is a new DVD that came out in November. All the Supermans will be released.
Yeah, so I think that there's some deleted scenes in there, but I haven't seen those yet. But there is a... I know that they hired the guy who directed Iron Eagle, Sidney J. Fury.
Oh,
which
good
is
Lord,
another
yes.
One of their big mistakes to direct Superman 4. it's just not a very good movie. You really don't want to watch Superman, like, collect nuclear weapons and fly into space with them and throw them away. I mean, I don't know about you, but that's not really what I wanted to see, you know, when you go to see that.
That's probably not necessarily the best way to dispose of things now, is it?
Yeah, no, I don't know.
We'll just fly out there. It'll just float around forever, harmlessly.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
That sort of takes place within the first couple minutes, if I remember. The movie is so odd. It starts out, and Superman just kind of takes all the world's nuclear weapons, and it's like, all right, you know, great. And then Nuclear Man shows up. I think Lex Luthor somehow creates Nuclear Man, who then creates a lot of problems for Superman, but I honestly can't remember. I think the movie is like 90 minutes long also. It's not exactly an epic.
So it's in a cartoon is what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so next up that I want to ask you about, I see some... I don't know, were these big-budget movies in the mid-80s here, Life Force and Masters of the Universe, when we get into that?
Yeah, those are the other two. If you're talking about canon big-budget movies, those are the ones that, you know, we talked about Superman 4, Over the Top. Life Force and Masters of the Universe are kind of the other two that are really amazing stories. And Life Force, they did, that was directed by Tobe Hooper, who had directed Poltergeist. And he went on to make Texas. He also his claim to fame was Texas Chainsaw Massacre,
yes.
And then he also made Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2 for canon after Life Force. But Life Force was kind of the first movie of theirs that was like they spent a ton of money on, and then it was a big failure. And it's a movie that was based on a novel called Space Vampires. And it's have you ever seen Life Force?
No, I've never seen it, but I can. I remember the poster, and I've seen it, I believe, on your site, and it brings back the memories of seeing it hanging in the theaters. But no, I've never seen it.
Yeah, it apparently cost $30 million, and it looks like it did. It's actually a really cool-looking movie. But the movie is mostly about this, like, vampire woman that the space shuttle finds on Halley's Comet, and they bring her back, and she's naked for the whole movie. So she's like, there's this kind of hot chick walking around naked for the whole movie.
All right.
And I mean, that might have seemed like a really good idea, but I mean, it just is so corny, and you can't really show it on TV. And it was just kind of a shocking new vision of science fiction filmmaking. You know, it's kind of unlike anything you've ever seen if you watch it. It looks great. The special effects are great. The music is great. Life Force is very interesting. Movie, They played it a few months ago here in New York at the Pioneer Theater, so there is some sort of midnight aspect to it, although I was there, and there were probably 10 people there, so I don't know if there's that many people who are into it, but life was pretty good. But then there's Masters of the Universe, which was to be kind of the first of their big kind of comic book adaptations, because Cannon really wanted to tap into kind of the Spielberg market of the 80s, you know, and Masters of the Universe, they bought from, who owned that? I think Marvel Comics, who knows, Hasbro owns Masters of the Universe, and so they bought that, and they put this movie into production, and, you know, it's not really very good. This didn't turn out very well. The big problem was that they didn't spend enough money on the movies that they should have, and they spent way too much money on the movies that they shouldn't. You know, Masters of the Universe, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. You know, Dolph Lundgren, He-Man.
Yeah, I don't know what's with that casting.
Yeah, it's actually a rip-off. If you watch it, it's kind of the screenplay is like a rip-off of Back to the Future more than anything. It's like if you kind of substitute, I mean, they're going back and forth between what's it called, you know, wherever He-Man lives.
Greystoke Island.
Yeah, wherever he lives, and and where Skeletor is, and then like sort of Earth, but Courtney Cox is in it. There are these two teenagers who kind of go along on the adventure with He-Man. And it's Courtney Cox and a guy who later was on Star Trek Voyager. And then there's this little sort of E.T. ripoff character who's played by the midget who was in, who I think eventually was in Willow. I think it's Billy Barty.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah, Billy Barty, yes.
Yeah, maybe it's the other guy. Warwick Davis?
Can't remember
which, yeah.
Oh, man.
But Masters of the Universe is not very good. But there are a lot of people who are way into it. I don't know. I get emails about it all the time. I'm like, I can't really help you. I get a lot of emails from people who can't figure out that Cannon Films is bankrupt, and my site is just like even though there's a big disclaimer on my site saying that, you know, it's just an appreciation site. But I get all these emails from people sort of querying to make Cannon movies, and it's like, whoa,
kidding.
Have you been?
Oh, wait,
so. Oh, like people with scripts they want to sell?
Absolutely, yeah. They want me to contact. You know, they think that they're talking to Menachem Golan, and they also are asking for, like, you know, where they can buy DVDs and footage and stuff. And I can't really help many of them. But.
Oh, okay. So, are there any screenplay titles or basic synopsis that you've gotten that kind of have stayed with you?
There was a guy querying a ninja movie, and I can't remember what it was called, but it was funny, and he was really serious about it. He was like emailing me about his like ninja credentials and stuff.
Oh my gosh, that is awesome!
I want ninja credentials. How do you get those?
Ninja school.
Oh, of course. What was I thinking?
Patrick, how did you get into your love for the Cannon stories and movies?
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure. I just think that when I was in college, I put a lot of this stuff together. I always was a big movie fan, and I started realizing that a lot of like the funniest movies from the 80s were all Cannon movies, which is kind of true. I mean, when you look at the breadth of how many movies there are, and how there's a lot of different separate things that are hilarious, and they're just sort of independent of each other, even. And they were all happening almost at the same time. And so I kind of put all that together, and then I wrote this article for it about Cannon Films, and then I started this website, I think in 2000, maybe 2001. And so I've gotten a lot of emails from people who work for Cannon who really love the site and say, you know, you really captured something, so that makes me feel good, considering that I didn't work for Cannon or know really much about it before I started looking into it. But yeah.
Okay.
One of my favorite stories. Can we talk about the Lombada movies? That's one of my all.
Oh my
gosh!
Yeah,
I've been. Don't think I haven't been waiting to get to that, because that's one of the best movie stories I've ever heard in my entire life, and I do nothing but read movie stories. It's so unbelievably ridiculous and funny at the same time.
So, yeah, I've been thinking of, I just got a projector, an HD projector here in my house, and I've been trying to get some friends together for a Lombada Film Festival to sort of christen it. But yeah, so what happened in 1989 was that Canon had kind of blown all of its money and started to go bankrupt, and they had like 20 movies in production that all got thrown away, and Golan and Globus, who were cousins, Golan's name is really Globus. He took his name from the Golan Heights. So they were cousins from Israel, and they got mad at each other because Globus was the one who was in charge of the business end of things, and Golan was in charge of sort of the artistic end of things. And Golan blamed Globus for letting the financial picture of Canon get ruined. And they decided, you know, they broke up. The studio went bankrupt, and it was really embarrassing. And there were a lot of people who wished them ill, I think. And so there were a lot of people in Hollywood were kind of laughing at them. And so right around the same time, which would have been the end of 1989, was when Lombada was hip or hot or whatever. I remember this very well, but I don't remember exactly who was dancing the Lombada. I just remember everyone saying that it was really hot. I think it was just that song. Do you guys remember what?
I remember the song, and I had the exact same recollection. I never knew anyone who actually danced the Lombada. I just remember hearing from everyone that it was like the hot hip thing.
What song?
Right.
The Lombada song. You don't remember the Lombada song?
No. Well, did it have words, or was it just like music?
I'm not going to sing it to you.
It had words, but it's like da 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 da. I'm not even gonna. I shouldn't even do it.
Yeah, see, exactly. Because I didn't want to do that either.
Oh, damn.
That's why I avoided that. But please.
I guess it was like the Macarena, which they, you know, amazingly enough, they were gonna make a Macarena movie also, which I'll get to in a second.
Oh, no kidding. Oh, that's good. All right. Well, go ahead.
So anyway. The Lombada movie was hot, and they had already made Break-In. You know, there was the big breakdance craze, and they made that in 1984, and that was a big hit. And of course, in Break-In is sort of a classic. And so then they decided that they were going to make they made a movie called Rappin' in 1986 with Mario Van Peebles, which is terrible.
You know, I had that on video for the longest time.
Yeah,
I remember finding that in the mid
90s. It's not really good. It's not even like Break-In is kind of authentic, not really authentic, but it's kind of fun and interesting, and sort of captures something. But Rappin' just doesn't capture anything.
Oh, it's a horrible, horrible movie. It's
yeah, it's really, really bad.
You know, and it's Mario Van Peebles is the star, and you really just don't believe that he's a rapper at all.
No, it's not very convincing.
Not in the least.
Yeah, there's just nothing convincing about it. And then they made a movie called Salsa in 1988, which I guess was when salsa was very, you know, I don't, who knows, but salsa was also really bad. And so anyway, so their studio had just gone bankrupt, everything was falling around them, and what happened was Globus was left in charge of Canon's production, even as they were in bankruptcy, and then Golan went and formed this company called 21st Century Pictures. And they both decided that they were going to make a Lombada movie. And they started, they announced it basically on the same day. And Golan, I believe Globus's announcement came first, because Globus had the rights to the Lombada name. But Golan had the rights to Lombada the song. So they had this big fight whereby they were kind of, they were trying to decide who was going to be allowed to call their movie Lombada, since they have these two, you know, dueling Lombada movies in production, kind of to spite each other. And as spring of 1990 unfolded, they had these two movies shooting, and it became clear that they were going to come out on the same day. Basically, is what happened was that Globus announced that it was going to, that they were going to open, that his movie was going to open on like March 8th, and Golan, his movie was originally supposed to open on April something or other. And he, you know, not to be outdone, he was like, no way, ours is opening on the same day. And he raced, and they, you know, they both actually came out on the same day. And I think some people remember this, you know, because I tell people this story, and they're like, oh, yeah, you know, there were two Lombada movies, weren't there?
I completely remember when they both came out the same day.
Yeah, they both came out the same day, and everyone was like, well, why? And so Golan's movie is called The Forbidden Dance, and Globus's movie is called Lombada Set the Night on Fire. And you know, they are two of the funniest movies ever made, and I would encourage anyone to track down a copy of both of them. The Forbidden Dance is now on DVD, and it's great DVD, so you should get it.
Are they supposed to be funny?
No.
What?
Are they supposed to be funny?
You know, I don't know. It would be hard to. It's kind of hard to imagine that they're not. But,
well, let me put it to you this
I guess
way.
They're not. Yeah, I mean, but looking back on them now, you can't. They are like the funniest. They're the funniest movies of all time, basically.
Here's what I remember about the movie Lombada, Jess. See if this sounds funny to you. Now, it's a dance movie, right?
Yeah.
Well, as I recall, the big climax in the movie happens to be when a bunch of people take a math test.
Oh.
That's absolutely true, yeah.
Does that sound like what you'd want to see if
Where's
you go to
the dance off?
Exactly.
But there's a big, yeah, and there's also Lombada Night on Fire is, it has it's kind of a stand and deliver ripoff. It's a really, that one's bad. That one's the worst of the two. But it also has the guy who you know, he's this hunky, like, soap opera actor, and he, sort of tearfully admits near the end of the movie that he was born Carlos Gutierrez and he's from the barrio, and you know, he's had to hide it his whole life, and that's why he dances the Lombada. And pretty amazing stuff.
Oh, that was so freaking good.
But the other movie, not to be outdone, Gohan's movie, The Forbidden Dance, which his ad said The Forbidden Dance is Lombada on them, and apparently there was a lawsuit filed, and there was an injunction where Golan had to stop using Lombada in his ads. He could only say that it featured the hit song Lombada, not that the Lombada would figure in the title anyhow. And so but that movie is about rainforest destruction, right? It starts out in the Amazon, and there's this hot princess. Rainforest princess, and she's hanging out in dancing the Lombada with her buddies, and this evil corporation comes and starts to tear up the rainforest, and so they send her to L.A. to try to stop this somehow, to the headquarters of the corporation. Well, that doesn't work, and so she decides that the only way that they'll be able to stop the destruction of her people's rainforest is to win the national dance-off competition and be afforded this, like, spot on national TV where they can talk about, you know, the destruction of her people's rainforest. And, you know, it's really good that she can dance the Lombada, because, thank God, because they win the competition and they're able to stop the destruction of the rainforest.
Did you just tell me the end of the movie, Patrick?
I'm really sorry. There are a lot of surprises in there. You know, there are a lot of twists and turns.
I can't believe how bad that sounds.
It's really kind of amazing. I mean, you have to be in the right mood. But the best moment in it, which I think is my favorite, probably my favorite canon moment of all time, is the bad guy who works for the corporation has kidnapped the princess and has her in on a stage. You know, they're trying to hide her from the competition. So because they know that the Lombada is so dangerous that if it's shown to the American public, you know, she's going to win the dance competition, and then it's all over.
Oh, my
so
God.
So they have her sequestered away at this old hotel or something. And she, you know, they start playing the Lombada music, and the bad guy, you know, points at her, and he's like, "Show me the Lombada." And then she starts dancing, and you know, luckily that creates a diversion where the good guy is able to come and get her away, and then they go to the competition. But you know, I it really has to kind of be seen to be believed. Both of the movies, you know, and the fact that they came out the same day. I mean, you know,
Like the forced Lombada.
So how well, did the competing Lombadas movies do at the box office?
Well, that was the thing. Because I think Cannon technically still had a deal with MGM, they were able to put Lombada Set the Night on Fire in something like 1,100 theaters or something. I can't remember what the exact number is, but it made like 1 point something million its first weekend. And The Forbidden Dance, because it was this new company, I think it was distributed by Columbia Pictures or something, and it was only in half as many theaters. So, and it did like 700,000. So, it, you know, to say that they split the market for the Lombada film, I think is kind of being generous. I don't know. I don't, you just don't know what. And I think they also came out a little bit late. I don't think they really caught the craze on the uptake.
No, as I recall, the craze was kind of on the outs by the time both of those movies actually
were
right, because the craze was based on one hit song. It wasn't even based on it was only based on a song. It wasn't really based on a craze. So I think that's kind of like breakdancing. I think was really a craze. You know, you walk around, you see people kind of trying to breakdance. It was like an actual craze. Where Lombada, I don't know if it was really qualifies.
Okay, I'm running out of time here, but before I end up letting you go here, I want to hit on one more thing. Wasn't Cannon involved in trying to make a Spider-Man movie?
Absolutely. Yeah, we didn't really get to talk about that, but Cannon tried twice. Part of the Masters of the Universe thing was that Cannon owned the rights they bought back when it was cheap, before Batman had come out, and people realized how much money there was really in superhero characters. Bought the rights to a bunch of superheroes. He bought Masters of the Universe and Spider-Man and Captain America. And Cannon tried twice to make a Spider-Man movie in the mid-80s, right after Invasion USA. They were going to make one directed by Joe Zito. And, there's rumors that Chuck Norris was supposed to be in it, but apparently that's not true. And the joke about that I read was that when Joe Zito went to Golan's office and said, if you're going to make Spider-Man, it has to be better than your other movies. You can't just make it like a normal canon movie. And Golan said, well, what are you talking about? and so I thought that was funny. But then that didn't, for some reason that didn't happen. I think it was like budgetary or something. And then again in the late 80s when canon was falling apart, they were going to make it at 21st Century, and it was it was at the very end. They were going to make Spider-Man with Albert Pyun, who is sort of a legendary bad director. It doesn't even have anything real to his name. I guess The Sword and the Sorcerer is his most famous movie. But they were going to make Spider-Man, and with starring Surfer, I can't even remember the guy's name, Laird Hamilton, is that his name?
I know who Laird Hamilton is, yes.
Yeah, I think I might be wrong about that, but it was going to star some surfer guy as Spider-Man. They started building the sets to it, and it turns out that Cannon's check to Marvel Comics bounced for the rights to it, and so they couldn't make it. And what was supposed to be Spider-Man, the sets were then turned into Cyborg, the Jean-Claude Van Damme movie. So,
man, talk about going from one extreme to another. You're going to the big Spider-Man movie, and you end up with the Jean-Claude Van Damme Cyborg movie.
Yeah, I mean, Cyborg, you really watch it, and you can't really see how Spider-Man could have, been made in the same universe, or with the same sort of behind-the-scenes or in-front-of-the-scenes talent as that movie. And, I mean, you just don't know how that could be possible, so.
Yeah. All right, Patrick, I got to let you go because I'm just about up against the end here, but I want to thank you for coming in and giving us a great interview and educating the masses on the wonder of Cannon Films.
All right, well, I had a great time. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Patrick.
Bye-bye.
And I want to thank everybody out there for listening. We're pretty much out of time. Hooter and Greenway is coming up right now on TalkRadioX.com. Say goodnight, Jessica.
Goodnight, Jessica.
Yamma, 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 whoopee-doo, scooby-doo, and gobbledygook.